Thought you knew, but you have no idea. It's the Urban Sports Scene.
Yes, the Urban Sports Scene is back. Live. I'm Wally, waiting on my co-host Will T. Always late as usual, but that's still my homie. That's my road dog for life. The lateness is always on CP time, man. Will T is always on CP time. But anyway, thanks for tuning in again for another episode of the Urban Sports Scene. This is episode 211. Like 211, not 187. No, there's no theft out here though. thanks for listening. Last week we were a no show. Things happen in life. We're back this week, ready to do it up bigger and better than ever. A lot of exciting things happening in the world of sports. Yesterday we had Duke winning the national championship. I know a lot of Duke fans are happy, especially my little my younger brother. I know he's ecstatic. I run a pool every year, and he picked Duke to win the national championship, so he ended up winning a certain amount of money, a lot of money actually. So he's happy. He's on my door as we speak, or on the phone calling me like, "Wally, where's my money at?" And I'm telling him I'm gonna give you money in due time. But again, I'm Wally. Again, waiting on my homie Will T. Again, another. Other special things that happened in the world of sports. Baseball, opening day baseball, started on Sunday with the Cardinals and Cubs. Then we had Monday, which I like to call the traditional opening day of baseball, with a jam-packed action of games. You had our local team, the Washington Nationals, with the I guess the debut of Max Scherzer. Pitching against the Mets, he got a loss in his first game. And then you had, in terms of, you had our Baltimore team, the Baltimore Orioles. You had, within the Baltimore Orioles, you had, what's my favorite? What I'm thinking of. The Orioles played the Tampa Bay Devil Rays. They won that game in a big way, in a blowout. I want to say it was 6-2 or 8-2. I want to say it was like 8-2. My phone's getting buzzed. Excuse me, folks. I'm happy for opening day baseball. I love baseball. I'm a big baseball fan. I love my Baltimore Orioles. But before we're gonna go into our tradition of the pregame, if you have anything you want to say, our phone lines are open. The number's 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. And within our pregame, the Nationals, I mentioned earlier, played the Mets opening day. The Mets won the game. With Bartolo Colon as their starter, going again. Matt Scherzer, you spent all that money to get him, making him the ace of the team. Me personally, I wouldn't have him pitch opening day. I think that should go to somebody like Jordan Zimmerman, a guy who I feel was pitched well for the Nats over the last some odd years. You can arguably say that Jordan Zimmerman has been the best pitcher for the Washington Nationals. I mean, even with Strasburg and Gio Gonzalez, Roark last year, Jordan Zimmerman has always been the best pitcher, in my opinion, for the Nationals. And arguably, you could say the second best pitcher in the National League behind Clayton Kershaw. So I would have had him start in that game, in the opening day game. But Scherzer didn't pitch bad. He pitched well. If it wasn't for some errors by Ian Desmond, he probably would have won the game. I believe the Nats lost 3-1. The Mets are an up-and-coming team, a team that many think that could possibly take the NL East. Between them and the Marlins, to fight it out with the Nationals. Nationals still, I see big things out of Bryce Harper. He had a home run yesterday. I look at Bryce Harper as a guy who could be the star. I mean, excuse me, be an MVP candidate for the Washington Nationals. I mean, in terms of National League, period. He's a guy that I think this is going to be a season. He had some injuries over the last couple of seasons, but I think this is his season. We hear about Mike Trout, and even here even with the Baltimore Orioles, Manny Machado. But I definitely think this is the season of Bryce Harper. This is the year that Bryce Harper turns it all around and becomes what everybody thinks he should be, the star of the Washington Nationals. I had a question. I actually posed a question on our Urban Sports Scene page about who should have been the opening day starter, since the Nationals have an abundance of gold within pitching arms and starting, aces in the rotation. My man, it was a lot. So my man Rob Valero said Max Scherzer was nearly flawless. The fielding and hitting, not so much. I don't think the outcome would have changed, would have been any different with Jordan Zimmer or Strasburg on the mound. I agree. Again, I think the defense played a part. But again, I mean, in terms of the defense, I don't think the defense did hinder Max Scherzer. But I would have had Zimmerman or Steven Strasburg as the starters for the Washington Nationals on opening day. And I really think Strasburg's going to have a big season. I think this is going to be the season that Strasburg is pronounced probably the best pitcher in baseball. If everything goes the way I predict, I think Strasburg will be the best pitcher in baseball. Lynn Green Robinson says, yes, it wasn't his fault. We lost. I don't think it's Zimmer. I don't think it's Scherzer's fault. But if you look at a guy who's you spend all this money to get, obviously, honestly, you're gonna think, all right, well, he did lose, so he's got to be at fault for something. And my man said Mike Morgan said he did well. I think Scherzer pitched well. I'm not knocking him, but again, I would have definitely gave that position to my to Strasburg or Jordan Zimmer. My man Will T's in the building. What's up, man?
What's going on, man? How you doing?
I'm good, man. Thank you for saving me. I did a lot of talking.
I mean, you're good at that.
Not really. Not really at all. But yeah, we're talking about Washington Nationals, Strasburg. Yeah, not just Strasburg. Scherzer's
open. He looked great.
Yeah, I mean, he was good. I mean, I don't think it's terrible. He's a guy, you spend all this money. He's a guy who doesn't go deep in the games. And you spend all this money. You're thinking of a starter who could, you know, who's going to probably go eight innings or whatnot. Scherzer's a guy who doesn't go deep in the games because he throws a lot of pitches. So at times, he's not that horse like a Jordan Zimmerman would be, you know.
So. I mean, he pitched great to me. I'm not going to say great. Mm-hmm. Great is the win. But he pitched very good yesterday, mm-hmm. to me, from my observation. I'm not an expert at all in baseball. Mm-hmm. You know, three unearned runs. Mm-hmm. He looked, you know, in the beginning, he looked a little jittery. Yeah. But after that, he calmed down. And was able to, I think it was, what was it, like 15 or 18 straight, 15 straight batters he retired?
Yeah, he pitched well. I'm not knocking.
He pitched very well. Mm-hmm. It's just that, once again, the bats, you know, Bryce Harper stepped up, provided a solo home run. But also, you know, when you're missing your top three hitters in Span, Worth, and Rendon, you know, that has something to do with it also, but
I like Taylor though.
I like Taylor too.
I think Taylor's gonna be a big player for this team.
That kid's gonna be good.
Yeah, I really do. I think he'd be a real good player. But I'll read two more.
Sorry for chewing on the microphone. I'm starving.
It's cool, no problem. My girl Melissa Mendel said, I don't think the outcome would have been different, but Jordan Zimmer should have had the honor. He's earned it and put in the house and put in his clubhouse time. I agree with that. You know what I mean? That's one thing.
I agree.
Of loyalty to Jordan Zimmerman. I mean, you didn't give him the payday that he should have got Scherzer's money.
How do we know? Maybe he doesn't want to be here.
That's true. That's something too.
So it's a dynamic to it that we just don't know as of yet. Mm-hmm. We don't know if he wants to be here for the long haul, but. I'll say this, even though Jordan Zimmerman may have earned it through his play and his longevity with the team, mm-hmm. you don't pay a guy $210 million to not be your opening day starter.
Yeah, of course I agree with that.
He had to take the ball.
Mm-hmm. So, real quick, I mean, I'm doing since the season just started, we can try to predict what's going to happen where the Nats are going to finish or whatnot, but let's do it. We won't have to do all that. Give me a bold prediction for the Nats this season. It could be individual or the team as a whole.
Bold prediction? Mm-hmm. Jordan Zimmerman, Cy Young winner.
Jordan Zimmerman?
Mm-hmm.
I like that one. All right, bold prediction for the Washington Nationals. Bryce Harper is the MVP of the National League.
Okay. I like that one too.
I see it. I just, you know, and Ray, if you're listening in, if Ray, if you're listening to the show, you know, he thinks I hate on Bryce Harper, but I see it. You know, this, I said this before the season even started. I thought it was going to be a season, just because just you had a season last year. He had injuries, but he still played well in the postseason. He was probably one of the more clutch players for the team in the postseason. And then now, I feel like this, you see a level of maturity. Like, he wants to be the guy. He's owning up to it. He wants to take over on this team. And you lost leaders like Adam LaRoche. You got Jason Worth on injury. So there's even questions about Ian Desmond still being on this team anyway down the road. So the way I look at it is Bryce Harper, this is his team. And then you got Rendon, who may not play this season. Well, he's going to be injured for most of the season. It looks like it. So when you look at the Nationals, you see the pressure. You see that there's a big level of responsibility on Bryce Harper. So I see him as a kid who's going to take on that and play well. So I see Bryce Harper as an MVP candidate, and honestly, finally being in the talks, he can finally be. We'll see a reason for him to be compared to a Mike Trout and a Manny Machado, folks like that. These young guns that people talk about nowadays.
I totally agree with you. I'll go with another prediction. I think Dan Uggla returns to form, gets 25 home runs in mid 90.
Does he even start?
He started yesterday, opening day at second base.
Okay.
25 home runs, mid 90 RBIs, like 95 RBIs.
I like Escobar. I didn't know they had Escobar. I like him. They should play him at second over Uggla. Just an opinion. I think they should, but that's just my opinion. But another bold prediction, since you went with Zimmerman, I actually think that Strasburg's going to be Cy Young. Strasburg's going to be pronounced the best pitcher this season in baseball.
Okay.
I totally believe it. So the two hype guns. You know, we heard Harper and Strasburg. They will definitely live to the billing of what people projected them to be this season. And they're going to carry the Nats. You know, I think Gio Gonzalez is going to have a big season too. No pressure on him. That's why I think it's going to be a big season for Gio Gonzalez. You don't?
Nope.
Watch, man. I'm telling you, there's no pressure on him.
We'll see.
Anyway, let's go to, what do you want to say, up 295, down?
Up 295.
Whatever Will likes to say. We're going to Baltimore right now. I like that. I like saying that better. We're going to Baltimore. The Orioles. Yesterday, they beat the Rays. I want to say 6-2. I believe it was 6-2. They beat the Rays 6-2 yesterday. Right now, they're up on the Rays 6-0. So my Orioles look good. They're my Orioles.
Yeah, they are your Orioles.
They're definitely my Orioles. I love the way Telly pitched. Well, I didn't love. Telly didn't look great yesterday, but he pitched well enough to win. He only gave up one run, which was a home run to Longoria, Tampa Bay's third baseman, perennial all-star. So, but other than that, he did well. He always battles. He's a gamer. That's what he does. He didn't have his best control. Had about four walks. I believe he threw like 43 balls and 52 strikes. But he found a way to win the game. It was impressive that the offense still consists. The offense that lost Nelson Cruz and Nick Markakis still was able to put up runs. Pierce hit a home run. Travis Snyder, who replaced Nick Markakis, went like 3-for-4, brought in about 2 RBIs, and also, oh my God, Peraza, I just keep messing his name up. Anyway, our left fielder, he had hit a 2-run shot. So the Orioles, Araza, I think I'm messing it up, Araza. So the Orioles consistently are playing good, are right now playing good baseball and still.
One game into the season?
Yeah, it's good baseball. They still have that image.
Consistent.
We have 6-0 right now. Okay. So it's 2 games in the season. So we have 6-0. The Orioles, the Orioles are still having that theme of being a big home run team. They're still doing it. Like, you just lost Nelson Cruz, a guy who had like over 40, had over 40, is it 50 or 40 plus home runs, whatever. You lost that production. Chris Davis didn't play because he had one game. He still had to serve that one game suspension that carried on from last season. You know what I mean? So, yeah, I'm impressed. You didn't get Adam Jones didn't go ham in that game, and you still was able to score about 6 runs against Archer, a good young pitcher for the Tampa Bay Rays. Yeah, I'm all for it. These O's are definitely doing it big right now, and definitely it's good to get these W's early. You know, going against a division foe in the Rays. So get these W's while you can. Look like they're gonna take the series. Right now, they'll go up 2-0 in the series. So they already won the series, and game three
be the sweep. I mean, it's still bottom of the second.
Yeah, bottom of the second. 6-0. With Chen pitching. I'm not really worried about it. So the chances of the Orioles going 2-0 in the series is pretty high.
Okay.
Are pretty high, excuse me. So the Orioles, right now, the Orioles look like, are the Orioles the favorite in the AL East? I know you're a Yankees fan.
I would have to say, well, pitching is going to be the downfall. I mean, can be the Achilles heel of this team. I'll just say that. It can be the Achilles
Which
heel
part
of this
of pitching?
Team. Starting rotation.
Starting rotation. That's the thing that gets me with folks about the Orioles. They always think that pitching is a problem. If you look at the track record over the last season, how this team is, their starting pitchers actually been pretty good. The difference between the Orioles pitching and many rotations in the American League, I want, because everybody looks at the Nationals. The Nationals have like higher guns. It's totally, that's a different beast. But within the Orioles, everybody in from 1 to 5, everybody's a productive pitcher. Usually in rotations, you have like, you know, the 4 or 5 spot are guys who really suck. But with the Orioles, everybody's a consistent pitcher. You know, and what I do love is that Tillman's starting to emerge as an ace, but everybody is a slightly above average pitcher. So pitching will be fine, especially with the bullpen the Orioles have. That's going to actually, you know, save them at certain points of the season anyway. So it's not like they have to go deep; they have to only go 6. And these guys, and most of the arms they do have in the rotation, you have Yubaldo Jimenez, who pitched well in the spring. Is now got the fifth. He's the fifth man in the rotation. That's a guy who used to be an ace in Colorado. He's the fifth man in the rotation. But Norris pitched well last season. You have Chen, who pitched very well, went 16-6 last season. Again, Chris Tillman has one of the better records as a starting pitcher over the last 3 years. And then you have Miguel Gonzalez, who consistently pitches well. So this team has pitching. So to me, it's how they do compared to last season with the losses. I mean, like Will said, and I totally agree, it's still early. So for me to be all hype for my Orioles, I know it's a little premature. But at the same time, they still have offense. They have enough offense. I think the pitching is better than what people think. Bullpen help. You got a closer in Britton. So this team, to me, will be better, especially when Matt Weiders comes back. It'll be even more better. So this Oriole team should win the AL East. I think they're the most – the team that worries me that can give the Orioles problems, actually there are two. After watching what the Blue Jays did to the Yankees yesterday, I was very impressed. And the Red Sox. I think the Red Sox are stacked. I think they've getting Hanley Ramirez and Hanley Ramirez from the Dodgers, Sandoval from the Giants. Those two individuals can make the Red Sox very, very prominent in the AL East.
Yeah, I totally agree with you. I think everyone should look out for Toronto this year. I think Toronto's going to be a team that's going to contend for the AL East or either take, you know, the AL East. Sorry, I'm just trying to digest my food.
I know, I tell you, but let it happen, man.
Yeah, just letting it happen, man. If I didn't get nothing to eat, I wouldn't have been able to make it here.
It's okay, man. Let it make it happen.
Yeah, I agree with you. Boston and Toronto will definitely be their biggest, stiffest competition for the AL East. It should be interesting. Should be fun. You know, still got 160 some odd games to go. So
yeah, 160 after this game will be 160. Yep. So we'll see how it goes. But give me an Orioles bold prediction.
Chris Davis will return to his form from the year before last.
He returned from form year
to his form. You know, when he hit all the home runs.
All the home runs.
Mm-hmm.
So I think somebody had a similar thing. I believe what's my bold prediction. My bold prediction is that I got to find it. There you go. My bold prediction is that Chris Tillman will win 20 games this season.
Cool.
20 games. I had to ask the same question, a bold prediction for the Orioles on our Urban Sports Scene page. Greg Harris said Chris Davis will hit at least 40 homers. So similar to what Wilt you said. George said Tilly's going to win around 16 to 20 games. We're going to see brilliant things from Gausman and Walker. So thanks for the comments. Really appreciate it. But yeah, I think Tilly's going to get about. My opinion is Tilly's going to get about 20 wins. I'm going to go hard with it. He's going to win 20 games and chances for to get the Cy Young. This is his season. The kid improves every year. I look forward to him. Look forward to see him do big things. Anyway, down to pregame. MLB opening day outside DMV. Which other games or players impressed you outside the
I only pay attention to two games.
Are you serious?
Two teams.
Good God.
The Nationals and the Yankees. There's only two teams I pay attention to. Until the end of, you know, till World Series comes around, till the playoffs come around.
You pay attention to the Yankees? So what did you like anything from the Yankees?
Not particularly.
A-Rod looked good, man.
A-Rod looked pretty good. I was surprised that he got as loud and as positive an ovation in the ovation that he received. So
I am the only Baltimore Oriole fan that's an A-Rod fan. A-Rod is like one of my favorite players of all time. So you'll never hear me bash A-Rod. A-Rod, talent is talent. I don't care anybody tells me. You can use any performance enhancement drug you want to throw in my face. Talent is talent. A-Rod is one of the more talented players to ever play this game of baseball. So yeah, I wasn't surprised that he played well. Greatness does that. To be honest with you, regardless of what you think about him, greatness does that. I was impressed. Obviously, you had Sonny Gray, who had a one-hitter for the Oakland Athletics, who pitched well. I believe they played the Texas Rangers, if I remember, if that serves me correctly. He pitched well. Then you have I was impressed with Felix Hernandez shutting down that Angels team. Mike Trout had a home run in that game. I was impressed with that. I was really impressed with Hanny Ramirez, who had like a boatload of RBIs. A game against the Phillies, against a Hamill. So I actually enjoyed watching. I enjoyed that. And the Padres slipping against the Padres, who stacked their team, made the trade to bring in the closer from the
Kimbrel.
Stacked their team and failed. And fell to the Dodgers. And I also I like seeing my man Nick Marquez, because I'm a Baltimore Oriole fan. He went to the Atlanta Braves. He had two RBIs to pretty much help beat the Marlins, the team that many think that has a chance to win the NL East. So there are a lot of good things that I like seeing. I liked or observed in a positive way of opening within opening day. So again, hope this good baseball play continues. Hope my Orioles continue to do well. The Nationals do well. Maybe we'll finally have that Beltway World Series that many want to see.
Yeah, I mean, hopefully anything's possible. You know, I definitely know that people in this area will go crazy for that.
Yeah, they should. They need a chance. They need some type of excitement in this for this sports town. Real quick, so let's go to boxing. NBC has boxing. This is a fight that I want to see. Danny Garcia versus Lamont Peterson.
I mean, this is a fight that's probably like a year and a half overdue.
I mean, it's still in their prime. It's not like
they're still in their prime, but it's a fight that should have happened last year at the latest. It's at 143, a non-title fight at a catchweight. Kind of takes some of the excitement out of it. These are two of the top fighters at 140, and everyone wants to see them fight and put the belt on the line at a weight that they're both, I'm not going to say comfortable at, because maybe Danny Garcia, he's talked about going to 147 after this bout. So I don't know if he's having weight issues, or he doesn't want to get down to 140, or he wants to see how his body fares at 143. But this is going to be a big fight for both of these guys. Obviously, you know, Lamont Peterson's for some big fights. You know, he fought against Amir Khan, beat Amir Khan in D.C. at the Convention Center, lost to Lucas Matisse. Amir Khan has beaten Marcos Maidana. He's starting to make his comeback. You know, he was knocked out by Danny Garcia.
Yeah, you said Amir Khan. All these.
Yeah, I don't know why I was talking about Amir Khan.
Go ahead.
Nah, I was talking about Amir Khan because he fought Lamont Peterson.
Yeah, they both fought both. Yeah. They have that in common.
Danny Garcia is having a senior moment. But Danny Garcia, it's a big fight for both of these guys. If Danny Garcia wins, he's going to go to 147. That's what they're saying. Lamont Peterson probably stay at 140. Even for the loser, if he looks impressive in this fight, there's still a litany of big fights that can be made for them. So I look forward to this fight on Saturday night. And if I had to make a prediction, I'm gonna go with Danny Garcia.
Yeah, that's what I. That's the thing. I'm gonna go with Danny Garcia as well. I like both of these fighters. To be honest with you, I'm a fan of both of these fighters. When I saw Danny Garcia fight for the first time, I was really impressed. To me, it was a guy who's really skilled. He's a boxer. He's not a brawler. He's a boxer. He paces himself pretty well. Fights and uses that jab effectively. Then you have Lamont Peterson, who, you know, obviously, when we're biased over here, I mean, I'm biased with Lamont Peterson because he's from around this area. I actually know his brother. So when I look at him, when he fights, it's like, okay, he's representing the area. So I'm very, you know, so I want him to do well. I was boosted when he defeated Amir Khan, and I would like to see him compete because, you know, you hear his story. His story is kind of, you know, I won't say it's jacked up, but it's a heartfelt story. A guy who, you know, was off the streets, got trained, and look at him now. You know, he's fighting. He had a big fight against Amir Khan, put him in a different level. So actually, from rags to riches type of thing. So if he can win this fight, it puts him in a different level. You know what I mean? Honestly, in my opinion, and I pose this question too, and I'll let you get to it. But you know, I thought him beating Amir Khan was big for his career. But I think if he wins this fight, arguably it could be bigger than Amir Khan win, which is what it can actually project him to. In this situation, I think he beats Danny Garcia. It can project him.
Yeah, it's definitely a fight. If Lamont Peterson wins, definitely takes his career to another level and gives him a lot more notoriety and a lot more exposure.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, if he wins, and let's say Manny Pacquiao loses to Floyd Mayweather on May 2nd,
yeah,
Manny Pacquiao possibly goes back down to 140. We could see a Lamont Peterson Manny Pacquiao fight at 140, which would be huge.
Yeah, it would be huge for him. And just again, it goes back to what you think. A guy from that situation, now he has an opportunity to fight the loser of the Pacquiao Mayweather fight.
Absolutely,
that's impressive. So I mean, I root for the kid. I do. I really root for the kid. But my gut feeling has Danny Garcia win the fight, though. That's my gut feeling.
My gut feeling is Danny Garcia wins the fight.
Do you think it's an action-packed fight? Do you think it's a fight that...
I think it's a fight that's a little...
A little dry?
Not dry, but it's going to be an ugly fight because, mm-hmm. you know, they're going to try to fight on the inside. It's going to be a lot of clinching.
Mm-hmm.
So I think it's going to be a good fight, but it's going to be... the pace is going to be a little bit slower.
Okay, so I guess we both stated it already. So the winner of the fight will probably fight the loser of the Pacquiao Mayweather fight?
Well, I'm not going to say because I think both of these guys are going in different directions. Danny Garcia is going to 147. Mm-hmm. Lamont Peterson's probably going to stay at 140.
Mm-hmm.
So Danny Garcia wins, he probably goes to 147.
What's next?
And who knows? You know, maybe if the Pacquiao Mayweather fight isn't close, then he gets the winner. Maybe he gets Floyd Mayweather in September.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe he gets, you know, Amir Khan's going to 147, much like himself. Maybe he they have a rematch at 147, yeah. Or maybe, you know, if he looks impressive, he gets a chance to fight Keith Thurman,
yeah,
at 147. So that would be an excellent fight.
Keith Thurman, I like that idea. Like Keith Thurman after he had an impressive fight about on NBC
to kick off the Premier Boxing
mm-hmm.
series.
I wouldn't mind seeing that actually.
What?
Keith Thurman. Keith Thurman's actually growing on me.
Yeah, despite having, I'm not gonna say despite, but including having such a high knockout percentage, he's actually a really good boxer.
Mm-hmm.
Has power and great in both hands, great lateral movement. Really good deep, not going to say great, but a good defensive fighter. Keith mm-hmm. Thurman is definitely one of those guys that's on the rise.
Yeah, definitely. All right, so Andy Lee versus Peter Quillen. That's yeah.
So Kid he, Chocolate, Peter Quillen. Yeah.
Who did he fight prior?
Who, like Peter Quillen?
Yeah.
I forgot who his last fight was against.
Okay, so Andy Lee. I know Andy Lee.
Yeah.
So Andy Lee's projected the favorite, right?
No.
So he's not.
Peter Quillen. So Andy Lee is the... title held. He holds the title.
Okay, so Peter Quillen. Score me on Peter Quillen.
Kid Chocolate, good fighter, 160. A lot of people saying that he's ducking Triple G.
Ogulati.
A lot of people saying he's ducking him because he gave up his title, in order to not fight him. But obviously, you know, him and Al Haymon, they had a plan. Al Haymon's the godfather of boxing at this point. He runs everything in boxing. He's probably single-handedly about to save boxing and put it back and hopefully restore it to the prominence that it had in the 50s and 60s. So Peter Quillin didn't want to go against him and what he, you know, what he was instructing him to do. But this is going to be a good fight. This is going to be a fight that's a step up a level of competition for Peter Quillin. Andy Lee, people are probably familiar with him from his days with being with the great Emmanuel Stewart. Rest in peace.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's gonna be. I think this one should be an entertaining fight. Quillin's more of a slick boxer. Andy Lee's a banger. So you know you're gonna get that those two different styles. It's gonna make a pretty interesting fight. But if I had to choose, Peter Quillin.
Don't know anything. I'm gonna take your word for it. Actually, I don't know anything about Peter Quillin.
Peter Quillin in Brooklyn, yes, his home. Yeah, I'm going with Peter Quillin.
All right. Well, it's time for commercial break. When we get back from break, we'll be talking about the college basketball national championship game, with the Duke Blue Devils. Coach K won his fifth championship. It's the Urban Sports Saint.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Hi, this is Wally Akinso from the Urban Sports Scene. Earlier today, I had a sit-down interview with Jim Gray, which focused on a hard decision that I had to make.
How many people know your decision right now?
In all realness, Jim, that's a dumbass question. I should smack your ass right now.
One hand or two hands?
If you keep playing, I'm going to smack you with two hands.
When did you decide?
The idea of me smacking you came about 30 seconds ago.
You still a nail biter?
Don't worry about my nails. They won't be in the way when I smack you. Don't worry about it, all right?
We've had everybody else biting their nails, so I guess it's time for them to stop chewing.
Jim, if I was you, I wouldn't worry about everybody else.
The answer to the question everybody wants to know, what's your decision?
I smacked Jim Gray.
That was the conclusion you woke up with this morning.
Yes, Jim, that was the decision that had me tossing and turning this morning. It was hard, but I felt that my left and my right would make an impact on your face. And I was right.
Why?
Why? That's why. You think you know? You have no idea. You don't know the decisions that anybody within the USS has to make.
Rubber band, man. Wow, little Taliban. All right, we're back from commercial break. You can listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.waleo.podbeam.com. Waleo is spelled W-A-L-E-O. Podbeam is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N.com. We're also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search the Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com. You can listen to us on the Sports Crit Podcast Show on Thursday nights at 9 p.m. Eastern Standard Time. Just visit www.blogtalkradio.com/WC Still a Fan. The show is produced by West Coast Still a Fan. Again, our phone lines are open. You can call in. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. All right, let's talk about the national championship game.
First of all, let me start off by saying I'm happy to talk about this because it's a change up from what we usually have in this section.
The Redskins?
Washington football.
The Washington Redskins?
It's yes.
Okay, man. They're not even on.
I'm happy, even though I didn't watch the championship game, I'm happy to discuss it.
I was watching it. But yeah, man, let's talk about the national championship game. It was a great game.
Well, no, I watched the first couple minutes of it.
You're just doing too much right now.
I watched the first couple of minutes of it.
Man, you're the man. You got to juice down. But, no, it was a great game. It was two teams going at it, two great coaches, really good coaches. One
great coach and one sore loser.
Yeah, we'll talk about that later too. The talent actually over and showed out at the end. You know, the more talented team won at the end. You had guys who made big shots. You had Tyrus. Tyus Jones who went ham. This guy who was clutch, made every big basket for the Blue Devils. And you also had the other freshman, I keep forgetting his name, that everybody's
Greg Pauls.
I keep messing up.
I know you're talking about McDonald's All American from Jacksonville.
Yeah, he
has
was
crazy
bounce.
Yes,
and he's Caucasian.
Yeah, I mean, I'm not
saying anything. I'm just saying when you think that's stereotyping people, but I'm stereotyping. But I'm not, but I am, which is pretty cool. Like this dude, like ball. You know what I mean?
Yeah,
like,
he played. He definitely took his game to another level.
He saved Duke. He saved Duke.
Yeah, I haven't watched the game yet, but I saw highlights of it. But yeah, everyone said, you know, I saw him in the McDonald's All American game last year,
mm-hmm.
and in the slam dunk contest, the kid has game.
Mm-hmm.
From Jacksonville, Florida.
He
wasn't one of the heralded freshmen that everyone was, you know, been raving about. That in that starting lineup that people were raving about. But I see why Coach K benched him this year.
Grayson Allen.
I see why Coach K benched him this year. Make him come back next year so he can build his team.
Yeah, exactly. Grayson, that was slick. A slick move
by Coach K.
Because go ahead.
Go ahead.
No, because they put Grayson Allen, gave him an opportunity to shine. The dude would have shined. Because you, like this, it's crazy. Because you're playing with Winslow, you got Jones, you got Okafor. Okafor goes down, and now it's his team to operate. And then you could tell, like, he felt confident being the man. He was a guy that was like, okay, this is my team. I'm going to do it. I'm going to bring this team back. He brought this team back himself, and it was impressive to see what he – It was impressive to see what he would, you know, what he can do for that. I mean, what he could do, being the man for this team, and like, so I believe Wisconsin was up nine. All of a sudden, he just went to the basket, got an and one. He hit a three. I mean, he was still going to the basket, attacking the basket, going to the line. He was a guy like you could say he played like an alpha dog. You know, for a guy who wasn't getting burned in the beginning, he played like an alpha dog.
He played like the guy who's going to be the man next year when that team's going to be built around.
Yeah, he does. Definitely.
Coach K, he pulled one over on everyone. You know, he probably told him, look, you come to Duke, you're going to get some time this year, but we're not going to build it around you. Your year is going to be next year. You're going to be the man next year. So, kudos to him. Kudos to Coach K. You know, it's funny. You know what's funny to me, though? Everyone's talking about how Duke has won a championship, but Duke literally did it with their four freshmen. Four freshmen scored 60 of their 68 points.
Mm-hmm.
And if Kentucky had won this thing, went undefeated, everybody would be lambasting John Calipari now because Calipari, the way he's doing it with his freshmen.
Yeah.
So it's funny to me when you sit back and you observe that.
Well, how Coach K is getting all the
love and how, you know, he did a great job with his four freshmen scoring 60 out of 68 points.
You got to conform. And
John Calipari, if he had went 40-0, everyone, you know, would have been taken away from him going 40-0, saying, well, you did it with freshmen. You're a used car salesman, yada, 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 this, that, and all that. It's just funny to me.
Let's be real. Like Coach K has different. He has a different reputation compared to Calipari.
Yeah, the perception of him is very different.
But he had to conform. My brother was a Duke fan. He was getting annoyed that Coach K wasn't going after one and done. You know, you get annoyed by getting eliminated all the time. All right, you get annoyed. It is what it is.
Yeah, he saw everybody else playing the game, and he said, "Well, I'm just going to play the game also, but I'm just going to recruit a certain type of kid that's one and done."
They're all the same.
So I don't want them. No, I mean, for him.
Okafor is the same. Okafor, like, I know what you're saying. Like, not getting that type of number. I know you're exactly.
Yeah, the
what you're
kid
saying.
That's in trouble. The kid that, you know, that we all know is going to go, but that isn't going to go to class. He's recruiting the student athlete, to say. The person you can call a quote-unquote student athlete, a high achiever in the high school. Who can get into Duke.
I hear you. No, I hear you.
And that although they'll be around for 1 year, their image is a little bit more clean cut and pristine. And that's what he decided to play the game, but kind of play it his way.
I know what you're saying too, but I think getting kids like Okafor and Winslow, I think they're a little different. I think he went the Calipari route this season. I think he did with Kyrie and stuff. And I think and Austin Rivers definitely went that route. But I think this season was a little different. This season was a different beast for him, for me, compared for Coach K. I'm not saying Okafor is that kind of student or whatnot, but to me, this is the flat out, you know, I'm leaving type thing.
Oh, absolutely.
Flat out, it was like there's no, even like the players he's getting, like even what's the Parker, you know, Jabari Parker. Same thing. I don't know what classes they're taking, so I won't say like the student athlete. I don't know. I don't want to make it sound
well,
like I'm going against like the kids from Kentucky either.
No, I'm not.
Brandon Knight was a scholar.
Was a scholar, yeah. Mm-hmm. But I think he's trying to clean it up a little bit, just going by for the guys who are, you know, 3'5", 3'6",
mm-hmm.
high achievers in high school. Not to say that Kentucky and other programs don't go after those guys, but I definitely think that Coach K,
their image, non-tattoo. I know exactly what you're saying. I'm not even arguing. You're right. Their image, they look different. But he can also tell them to clean up. They still could be the same people. He could tell them to clean up a little bit. Just do this, that, and the other. You have to be betrayed a different way. Kentucky, Calipari coaches a different style than Coach K. Like, if you look at Calipari, even over the years, his players are more brash. His team is more brash.
Absolutely.
It's always been that way because he's brash. You take on the image of your coach. You know what I mean? If you heard, you hear him during halftime when they interview him at halftime. You hear him. Pre-game and post-game press conferences. He's pretty much honest, he pretty much says what he feels at the time. You know what I mean? And you see on the sideline, like that time, it shows how arrogant he is at the same time. When he was like, I want this kid to make this free throw or something, I want this team to make that layup or whatever.
They wanted him to foul him.
Colley Stein. So he can, you know, show him that he can make layups in the clutch. Or he was like, he was actually cheering on the opposition one time because he was pissed off at his team. Like, it's arrogance. That just shows you how arrogant he is to a point. You don't hear Coach K won't show you that much because Coach K is about, he keeps it in. You know, you see I'm not saying Coach K is not passionate, but he keeps his emotions in. He's more PC. He's politically correct.
Yeah.
You know what I mean? And Calipari isn't. But I think that Coach K will tell his kids, chill out, this, that, and the other. Like that, I think he'll do that. Even, you know, he knew what kind of kid Christian Laettner was. But he told Christian, he knew how to hone Christian Laettner in. It was like, all right, I want you to act this way. You know? Every once in a while, Christian Laettner would act dumb.
But he would act like a douchebag.
Exactly. But he just reined him in.
Yeah.
That's Coach K for you. But speaking of Coach K, do you think he's the best coach ever?
No. John Wooden still has 10 NCAA championships. He had a decade of dominance. So, no. But I do think, you know, if you do adjust for certain elements, you know, now, you know, with the one and dones and, excuse me, and the other things as far as, you know, guys leaving early, and you do adjust for that versus, you know, John Wooden with his 10 NCAA championships, You definitely have to look at Coach K in a different light and put him up there and say he's inching ever so closely to John Wooden. But no, not right now. He's not the greatest college basketball coach.
I pose the same question. I'll say my opinion too, but I pose the same question on our Facebook page. Is Coach K the best college basketball coach ever? My man George said, best coach of the 64 team tournament era for sure. Can't stand him or Duke, but Coach K out coached Bo Ryan last night, and look at where Duke's defense was in January where it is now. That's a good point, because Duke's defense in January was horrible, and against Wisconsin they strapped, and in the tournament they strapped to us, to be honest with you. My man Jeremy Gordon, the commit, said absolutely it would be nice if they got less help from the officials though. They get help, all right. Duke gets help from the refs. They get help.
Absolutely, they do.
Excuse me.
Not only do they get help from the refs, they get help from the NCAA selection committee. in my opinion.
Explain that.
No, I mean, if just realistically looking at it, just looking at their path to the championship game opposed to a Kentucky's path to the championship game, you can't tell me it wasn't tougher. Can't tell
Wisconsin,
me.
Yeah, on Wisconsin side.
Yeah, you can't tell
why
me.
Would
you know,
Kentucky. Wisconsin side.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have who's the other Nova? Yeah,
Villanova. Everybody.
Yeah, no one really. Yeah, no.
You can't tell me that Duke didn't have an easier path to the Final Four, to the championship game than Kentucky, and Kentucky was the number one overall seed.
That's true. I never. Yeah, that's a valid point. I don't look at Coach K. Coach K, best coach. You know, I think Coach K is probably one. Yeah, he is probably the best coach. But I think there's coaches out there that aren't just are up there or close to Coach K, to be honest with you, with less talent. I'm always give Izzo props because Izzo's teams
absolutely
are never as talented as Coach K's team. And I think when we assess coaches, though, we have to really assess who's bringing in the talent too. I think a lot of times we assess coaches and who you know and rosters and whatnot. We don't really look at situations. But when I look at Izzo. I mean, he knows how to win, man. He really does. And that team, though, Duke blew him out. They dubbed him. But look at the talent compared to what he brought in to get that team to a Final Four.
Absolutely.
I think Rick Pitino is just as good as – when I look at Rick Pitino is not far from Coach K.
Oh, he isn't.
Rick Pitino, again, less talent with Louisville. They lost their best scorer.
Billy Donovan.
I'm going to give you a guy who's not coaching anymore. And I think that, truth be told, if he continued coaching, he would be up there with Coach K. Jim Calhoun. I think Jim Calhoun's an excellent coach.
Yep.
And St. Era. He's a guy that you saw his UConn teams win championships – period. Like, it's the guy knows how to coach a team up. With El Amin beating a Coach K, you had Ben Gordon's team. You know, they won it with Okafor, and Ben Gordon won the championship. And, you know, he just – and look at his protege in Kevin Ollie. That's a protege. guy who he coached, was on his staff, won a national championship.
Yep.
So it just and, you know, shows you a lot. And all he won three championships. I'm sorry. Calhoun won three championships and with – Kemba Walker. Oh, my God. That's three championships.
And so, if you want to be technical, that team that Kevin Ollie won the championship with was his team.
Yeah, seriously. That was his team.
That was his team.
Yeah, you're right. That was his team. So, to be real, I mean, Jim Calhoun, to be honest, is up there. So, we're talking about let's just speak it in terms of facts for him. That's three championships, and he left the game pretty – he left the game prematurely, period, to be honest with you.
Mm-hmm.
Three championships. That's impressive.
Very impressive.
So when I look at Coach K, I mean, to me, yeah, I can't argue. Yeah, he's the best in this era. Was he better than John Wooden? No, because 10 speaks volumes. 10 is 10.
Yep.
All right, I don't care how many teams are in it. 10 is 10. But I will go to my man George's point. Within the round of 64, yeah, Coach K is probably the best in this era. I'm not going to knock it. He has the most rings, the most championship rings within it. But when I look at other coaches, I don't think he's not far above
He's not head and shoulders above everyone else.
Because, again, you had Duke, Carolina. Some of these teams consistently brought in McDonald's All-Americans. And Izzo would get his guys. Rick Pitino, when he left Kentucky and just did the same thing in Louisville, that shows you the type of coach he was. And he's done it in various different locations, Providence, Kentucky, and now Louisville. So when I look at Rick Pitino, I look at an excellent coach, a guy who's just as good as Coach K. And I'm gonna tell you another guy who I think is an awesome coach as well. I always talk about Wichita State. I love that dude, man.
Greg Marshall.
I think Greg Marshall is an excellent coach. He's just in Wichita State.
I think he's an excellent coach too. You know, if he plays his cards right, he'll get an opportunity like one of the coaches we'll talk about later on during this segment, Shaka Smart. But Bo Ryan, his post game interview. What do you think about it?
All right, Bo Ryan is like the biggest baby in the world. It's the same thing. I remember we had this discussion about Dez Bryant and how, you know, Detroit, and then he complained about what happened against the Packers. It's the same thing with Bo Ryan. You got away with a lot against Kentucky. You did. You got a shot clock. You had a shot clock that went off, and you got a layup off of it. And it was an obvious one. Right, you had some phantom fouls that were called within that play, within that game, period. And you're complaining. So you got away with one. You hear me? You got away with one against Kentucky. Played Duke, and you weren't happy with the officials, and then came out and complained about that. That's one. That was, which was annoying to me.
Well,
and didn't give Duke his credit with just saying like, we didn't get played like this all season. They were bumping his riders. I just feel bad for my kids to go through that. That's one. The one that really annoyed me though was the comment about renting players, like renting a player for a year. Like that didn't need to be said at all. So he was talking about basically Coach K is talking about Okafor and folks, and you know, basically renting players for the one and done player compared to him having. He said, we don't get those kind of kids. We get the kids that, you know, I want to get those kids who stayed 3 years, whatever. BS. That's a lie. If Okafor wanted to come to Wisconsin, you would take him. Okafor doesn't want to come to Wisconsin.
Yeah, I mean, I'll just say this. You know, it's in bad taste for to show you as a coach that, you know, when it happened in College Park against Maryland, you know, after the loss, and you know he tried to get Mark Turgeon off of the stage early, off the podium early, and bump him on the way down when you lost. You know, people forgave you, but now this, you know, two times it's a track record. It shows that you're a sore loser. To give props to Coach K and Duke, you know, the better team won. Let's be realistic. Mm-hmm. To not even say, you know, congratulations to Coach K. You don't even have to say congratulations. Just say, you know, we lost. The better team won today. You can complain about the referees, the officiating, but still, you know, be the bigger man. You know, you're supposed to be the coach, the leader of that program. You're supposed to set an example. You know, the comments about renting players for 1 year, that's just classless. You know, you stated it. And ultimately, that'll be another reason why those type of kids don't want to come and play for you.
They won't. And Decker was a, and what annoyed me about the statement, Decker was a highly recruit who last season, to be honest with you, there were talks about him. He talked about him going pro. And I believe Decker's he's a sophomore.
Nah, he's a junior.
He's a junior.
This year.
But I mean, but you know what I mean? Like, he was talks about him going pro anyway. So, that comment really annoyed me because it wasn't needed. Like, that comment wasn't needed at all.
Yeah, you take away from the great game that was played, you know, that people tuned in to watch. You know, those comments, you overshadow your team's effort.
Mm-hmm.
You know, even though it was a loss, you overshadowed the effort and you overshadowed your season, because this is what people are going to remember about you personally as a coach.
Yeah, if a player says it, it doesn't bother me because he's a player. He's a player. He's in it. He's a kid. He's not the authoritative figure of this team. He's a college kid. But you being a coach, complaining like that, that's what annoys me. And you're in like your 60s. That's what annoys me. Like, you should, like, hey, just be PC. You could be, it's easy. Be PC and say, all right, well, yeah, it was a hard game. Congrats to the kids over there for Duke. Coach K did a great job. And let it be done.
I mean,
go to your kids and say, well, yeah, man, they really hosed us, this, that, and the other. Or after, let it settle a little bit and be like, yeah, they got some calls. But we should have fought through it. There's a lot of things you could have said throughout that whole process.
I mean, he didn't even have to be PC. He just could have been like, you know, they won. I still, you know, not to take away from what they, you know, from what they accomplished, but we felt as if we got some bad calls.
Yeah.
And just, you know, lick your wounds and be ready for next year.
But this is the difference. This is what annoys me about the situation. All right, you saw Calipari when they lost, didn't refer to anything like that. They got hosed. Right, he could have complained, and had a reason to complain. He could have complained, but he didn't. But look at look at Bo Ryan. And if I really be honest with you, watching that game, I watched the game. Maybe one call, one or two calls where it was like, okay, well, they, you know, they got robbed. Two calls, and that stretch which he's referring to. Two calls.
All right, but get off of Bo Ryan. Let's get back on. Let's talk more about the game. Players in the game, specifically Andrew Harrison.
He called Kentucky game?
Yeah.
Kentucky Wisconsin game.
Andrew Harrison called Frank Kaminsky the N-word at the post-game press conference.
I don't even think that's a big deal.
It's not. I'm going to tell you exactly why it's not a big deal. And I hate to hear people try to make it a big deal.
Mm-hmm.
Because I don't know one person who's competitive after they lose that doesn't say something derogatory or has a derogatory thought about their opponent.
Mm-hmm.
It's just that he made the mistake of being in front of a microphone.
He could, yeah.
And it being audible.
Yeah.
That's all it is. That's all it is. I know someone beats me and someone asks me a question about the person that beat me, I'm going to be like, man, F them.
I am too.
To me, it's not a big deal. And that's why I don't even want to go into it a lot. A lot of people are trying to make this a racial thing. But it has nothing to do with race. Even though, you know, the N-word was used, there are components of it that you can point to and say, you know, there's a race component to it. But to me, it's all competition. It was done in bad taste by Andrew Harrison. And also, he called Frank Kaminsky and apologized, and they talked it out. So it's not a big deal. Let's move on.
I bet you Kaminsky wasn't sweating it. I'm going to tell you why he wasn't sweating it. Let's just be real within our community. We use that word like it's dude.
Yeah.
Like, F that dude. All right? Do you understand? Like, F that dude. We say it. We say it to white folks. Not to, but you know, talking about folks. It could be a white person. Like, you know what I mean?
Make it right.
Make it right, but we do it. We use it part of our lexicon. We do. A lot of us. So I didn't look at it as a big deal. It was just like him saying F that dude. Now, granted, he the mistake he made was saying it around the mic where, you know, that thing can be picked up. But I knew he's coming from. You just, like, you feel like you just been cheated in a game to get to the championship. You had history on the line. You talking about Kaminsky because everybody's annoyed at him as the best player in college basketball this season. He won the Naismith Award and stuff like that. And you just lost to this dude. And if you watch the game, there's a lot of trash talking between the teams. There was.
Yeah.
So he's annoyed.
So he's annoyed, and he just said what a lot of people would have been thinking at that time. I don't even want to keep going on about this.
But I want to read off some comments on our Facebook page. My man Troy said, "What the media is failing to recall is that Riley Cooper said the N-word in a derogatory manner and was only asked to go to sensitivity counseling for a few days. In fact, he received a new contract with a nice raise the following offseason. However, they'll vilify the amateur athlete, though." That's a good point. I didn't think about that. I don't want to go into like a whole racial diatribe because I don't really care about that. My girl Nikki Carter said, "I don't care either." She doesn't care about the comment. But if he was white and said that about a black player, it would be a whole different situation. Yeah, but that's, again, I mean, we're in that society. That's a society. So we already know how that is.
This is my last comment on it. If a white player said it about a black player, I would take it more of at the heat of the moment he was upset. Yeah. I wouldn't necessarily label him as being a racist.
Okay. That's cool. That's fair. Let's go down. Let's go to the next topic. All right. So we mentioned we were talking about Kentucky player Harrison. And we both agree, though, it's not a big deal, though, right?
No.
All right. So we talk about a Kentucky player, Harrison. Let's go to another Kentucky player, and we're going to also compare him to a Duke player. All right. So Towns, after seeing Towns and Okafor in the tournament, you know, there's a lot of talk about who's going to be the big man selected first between the two. Who do you think should be the number one draft pick between those two?
Who should be the number one draft pick?
After watching the tournament.
After watching the tournament, you got to go with Karl Anthony Towns. Okafor defensively is terrible. His lateral movement, his ability to rebound, his off-ball defense, his weak side defense is terrible. But he does have one thing that you can't really – well, you can teach. He has one thing that you can't teach in size. And B, he's mastered something that is hard for a lot of young big men to do, which is develop a back-to-the-basket game in the post.
Yeah.
So – you got to balance that out depending on if you have the number one pick. You know, do you want to take the guy in Karl Anthony Towns that has a little bit higher ceiling because he's a little bit better athlete? Defensively, he's better, but his back to the basket game isn't on par with Okafor. Or do you want to take Okafor, who's a guy who's a good passer from the post, but a weak defender and a weak rebounder? So, you know, both of these guys will be heavily scrutinized over the next coming months as we make a run to the draft. So, but if you had to pick one, who would you take?
I'll take Towns. I like Towns. Actually, I like Towns post game. I think it's not better. Okafor has more versatility within his moves. His footwork is really good. Okafor's footwork is good.
His footwork is tremendous. It's just not good on defense.
His footwork is good offensively. But Towns, which I always look at a big, can finish with either hand around the basket. I looked at it like Towns when he played against Kaminsky, that he got where he wanted anytime he wanted to. Now shots did they fall all the time? No, but he dropped step right, dropped step with the left hand. Shots rattled out. He got good depth, deep position. So when I look at Towns as a guy in the post, he's just as good as Okafor. Then we're looking at this. Now let's go to this other element. He's an 81% free throw shooter.
So which is rare for a big man.
So he's gonna get fouled in the league. So you already know in college he's 81% free throw shooter. How I always project that in the league is that time he's gonna improve in the league. I could see this kid being like an 85% free throw shooter as a big. So you know he can pick and pop because he's able to do that as well. So when I look at Towns, the ceiling is up. He's athletic. His post game is good enough. It's not Okafor good, but it's good enough. Believe me, it's good enough. I look at it, I thought he was more dominant in this against quality competition in this tournament compared to Okafor. And that's crazy because when I saw Okafor for the first time, I was like, Okafor is that dude. And when I saw Towns initially, I was like, I'm not that impressed with Towns. Over this stretch run for Kentucky, no, especially looking at him against Notre Dame, even Wisconsin, this kid can go. The only thing that went against him for this team is that went against him for Towns against Wisconsin is that, truth be told, John Calipari didn't utilize him enough against Wisconsin.
I totally agree with you. Just to put a bow on it, we both agree that Karl Anthony Towns would be the guy we would select, out of these two to start, if you are rebuilding franchise.
All right, let's speak of his head coach, John Calipari. Kentucky head coach, and Dikembe Mutombo made the Naismith Memorial Hall of Fame.
Also forgetting Lisa Leslie.
Oh, Lisa Leslie made it too?
Yeah,
Lisa Leslie. I love you.
Congratulations. I'm pretty sure, John Calipari would have liked the national title and going 40-0, going on top of his Naismith Hall of Fame selection, but sometimes you can't get everything. I'm sure with the way he recruits and the way he coaches, in the next year or two, he'll have another championship ring. So I'm not even worried about that. But he won't. He'll be hard pressed to make another run like this at history.
Yeah, I know. I'm happy for Calipari. He's done a lot. He's done a lot for the game of basketball, college basketball. He's giving kids the opportunity to get ready for the NBA. That's what I like.
Yeah, and you can't fault him because he says that, he speaks honestly to the kids, and if it's time for them to go, he'll say, hey, go.
Yeah, like
go. He's not like some of these other coaches who
try to hold you back.
Yeah,
for their own selfish reasons.
So a lot of people have a lot of things, disparaging things to say about John Calipari, but to me, just lets me show that he's for his kids, and he's for, he's showing that you can do it both ways, be for yourself and be for the kids.
He's real. That's what I like about him. He's real. He said these kids come, they play college basketball to achieve their dream. Their dream is to become an NBA basketball player. His job, and he does his best for them to achieve that dream. That's his goal, is get those kids ready for the NBA. He says it all the time. When you go to school, you go to a 4-year school, your job is to get out there and to get you prepared for a good job. You want a 6-figure job.
Yeah.
That's a goal. You want a 6-figure job. All right? Period. Well, those kids who go to Kentucky, who went to UMass, who went to Memphis, the basketball players went there to achieve their goal, which is probably a 7-figure income.
Let's be honest with you. We all, like you said, everyone goes to college to put themselves in a position to earn as much possible as a professional. There are very few of us who, after 1 year of college, are prepared to go into our profession and be very good at it and make a lot of money.
Uh-huh.
John Calipari helps these young men maximize their potential.
There you go.
And he puts them in a position so they can take care of themselves and their families for generations and generations to come.
I can't knock it.
You cannot get mad at the guy.
Yeah, and so I want to give a shout out to my man, Dikembe Mutombo, who this should have been happening a long time ago. As a Hoya fan, this is a guy who did a lot for the game of college basketball. And in the NBA, he did some great things in the NBA.
Yeah, I'll definitely say he's probably John Thompson Jr. He's probably, out of John Thompson Jr., the big man he's coached, he's probably the last great big man that he had, dominant big man. You go Patrick, Alonzo.
Zoe was, Zoe was after Dikembe.
Oh, yeah.
Dikembe was
yeah, that's right. That's right. Dikembe,
you know, they were the same team. And Dikembe left to go to Denver. And Zoe was still on the team. Then Zoe left.
Yeah, so, you know, of that triplet, you know, one of the triple, the dominant big men, mm-hmm. John Thompson Jr. Helped produce at Georgetown during his run there.
I love Dikembe. Mutombo was always one of my favorite big men. As a Hoya fan, he was definitely the Twin Towers with him and Zoe. That was a special thing. He was a really effective defensive player, one of the best defensive centers you ever seen in the NBA. Though Shaq gave him the business, and I guess that 76ers Lakers championship.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
That was something else. But I didn't think Shaq could do that to Dikembe, but he did.
Yeah, he did.
And some. All right, let's go to Will mention Shaka Smart,
the man of the hour, the guy who I am so happy for and proud of. Cause you want to know why?
Why
he did it the right way? He didn't, you know, he had a level of success at a school that traditionally hasn't been a basketball powerhouse. Most guys in that position, once you know, one of the major conference teams came calling, they would have jumped at the first opportunity. Shaka Smart said, I'm going to stay. I'm going to play this out. I'm going to show you that not only just having one good season and making it to the Final Four, but I'm going to continue to have consistently good teams doing it my way. And then when the right opportunity comes, and to me personally, this is the opportunity you couldn't turn down if you were him. You know, University of Texas has the richest athletic department in the nation. I'm happy for him. He did the right thing. And hopefully, you know, that style of basketball will transfer to Texas. And, you know, he'll have continued success.
Yeah, I'm happy for Shaka. Not too happy because I thought he should. I mean, if anything, I wish Georgetown would have made a play for him. The Hoyas would have made a play for him.
Georgetown has a coach.
I wish Georgetown would have played for him. I mean, if he was on the market, I would have made a play for him. Now, could they have outbid Texas? Probably not. But I would have made a play for him. I would have been like, sorry, I'm hurting feelings. But I'm just saying, like, Shaka's bringing in guys, athletic guys, and VCU that's similar to what Georgetown likes to bring in right now. The transition would be easy. Now, again, he's going to Texas. I think he'll be very successful in Texas. They have good athletes in Texas.
They have Dallas and the Houston area basketball players. They got some ballers out there.
And I think his style will work. He's a good coach. He really is. My fear is that I hope what happened to Anthony Grant, who did a really good job for VCU. Then he went to Bama, struggled a couple seasons, now he's out of a job. He took Bama to a tournament once, but he struggled a couple seasons, now he's out of a job. I hope that doesn't happen to Shaka in Texas. But yeah, he's a great coach. He's a good coach. Same thing like how we look at Brad Stevens now in who's played for the Boston Celtics, who's doing a good job in Boston with the limited talent he has.
Yeah, he's got them competing for the number 8 playoff seed.
So but I look at Shaka as that same caliber of a coach. He's a young, smart mind. So and his players play for him. And if you see anything you've seen within VCU, his players play for him. He knows how to relate to the young guys.
Yep. Kudos to him. Congratulations to him. I think Texas has they've got an excellent basketball coach.
But you think he'll do better than Matt Barnes? Rick Barnes.
That's going to be hard pressed. Rick Barnes, out of what, 18 years, made the tournament 16?
Yeah.
So he's going to be hard pressed, but I do think he's going to consistently put that Texas team in the conversation to make, you know, give them an opportunity to make deep runs to the Elite Eight.
Say Shaka misses the playoffs. I mean, the tournament twice. It's his first two seasons. What does that do to his image?
I think it doesn't upset his image. It doesn't knock. I don't think it's too big of a knock for his image because, you know, he has to come in, you know, on the roster that he already has. He has to get his type of players. Mm-hmm. You know, they're going to lose, what's his name, Miles Turner.
Yeah, who's going to the draft.
But, you know, Shaka Smart has to have the opportunity to recruit his type of players. And implement his type of system. So I think if you're Texas, you need to be patient. Give him 3 years. They said he has a five or six year contract with all of it but 1 year guaranteed. So he'll definitely have the time to turn it around.
Well, we'll see. I have all praise to Shaka. I wish him the best. Again, he's a guy that I do like. He should have been a Hoya. Anyway, it's about time for commercial break. When we get back, we'll be talking about the Wizards. Otto Porter's finally getting burned again.
Absolutely.
Randy Whitman's a funny dude. It's the Urban Sports Thing.
For ages.
You dig?
Deuces.
Morning, it's me, Magic Johnson here. I won 5 NBA championships and Olympic gold medal. So I'm calling the shots today. Get up out of bed, into school, try hard, do well. School got me to where I am today. So be there every single day and, of course, give it your best shot.
Yeah! For the first time, it's going down history, baby. New 3-6 Mafia featuring 8-Ball and MJG, Young Buck. It's a Tennessee thing. We gotta stay. Till I die.
All right, back from break. I'm here ready to talk about some Otto Porter and the Washington Wizards, my former Georgetown Hoyas. I got a lot of Georgetown stuff going on right now, man. It's a big Georgetown thing. Anyway, the phone lines are open. The number is 202-495-0904. That's 202-495-0904. Anyway, what? You got something you want to say?
Oh, no.
All right. Right now, well, like I mentioned before, Otto Porter's been playing great of late. Could Otto Porter have been a better pro? What's for Randy Whitten?
I'm not going to say he could have been a better pro. What I will say is this. His confidence would be higher if he had consistent minutes. And, you know, and he was able to have those peaks and valleys as a rookie and as a young, you know, and starting his career. Because the reality is, you know, when you're that young and you're coming into the league, you need to have consistent minutes. You need to know, okay, I'm going to come in around this time. So you know to prepare yourself prior to the game and you can mentally and physically be ready once you enter the game. But when you're coming in sporadically, when you're playing sporadically, and also on top of that, when your coach isn't a good offensive coach, it stunts your development as an offensive player. And, you know, with you not getting the consistent minutes, it kind of hurts your confidence. And Otto Porter's a guy who, he's kind of a jack of all trades. He doesn't do one thing great, but he's pretty average at everything.
Yeah, that's true.
You know, especially defensively. You know, has long arms, can get into the passing lane, get a lot of loose balls, create steals. So, you know, you needed to build up his confidence and get him into the lineup.
No, for me, all about Otto, like, which I don't understand about Randy Whitman when it comes to Otto Porter. Otto Porter's the type of player you want to play. A guy who plays hard and tries to do everything on the court for you. So those are the kind of players that you want on your team. Like, if this was like San Antonio Greg Popovich, Otto Porter would be playing. He would get burned. I'm not saying, like, he's a poor man's Kawhi Leonard in that regard. A guy who does everything, tries to defends, rebounds, passes. He does it all for you in terms of he plays hard within all those elements. So we don't when you don't play a player like that, it lets you know, in my opinion, that what kind of coach you're dealing with. Because as a coach, in my opinion, you want a guy who is going to do everything out there in the court for you. He don't have to be a starter, but he's going to do everything out there in the court for you.
And let's not mention when this team is at its best, it's running.
Yeah,
it's getting out on the break. Otto Porter is a guy who runs the court
hard,
and he can create steals for you. So he's the type of guy for what you need offensively to put your team in the best position to win, which is getting out on the break. He's a guy that's essential and can help create those opportunities for you. For him not to get consistent minutes, I don't know. Maybe it's, you know, Randy Whitman wanted to change it up with different lineup combinations. Maybe Otto Porter isn't putting the work in. Randy Whitman doesn't feel he's playing hard enough in practice.
I know, I can't believe it. This guy just when you watch him on the court, he seems like such a hard worker. And even when you hear Marshawn Gortat talk about him during the offseason, he's like one of the hardest. He said it like Otto Porter's one of the hardest working young men on our team.
Short story.
Go ahead.
Funny story. Well, not funny. Yesterday, I was coming from the McLean area in the D.C., like middle of the day. Mm-hmm. Guess who I saw driving?
Cortot?
Nah. Guess.
Is this a wizard?
Yeah. Your favorite wizard.
My favorite wizard?
The soft one. You say it's soft. Yeah, you say
it's soft. Super soft.
Yeah, I saw Nene driving on GW Parkway.
Was it a pink car?
Nah, it wasn't a pink car. Okay. He was in a... I'm not going to put what type of car he was out. It was a real nice car, though. He looked like he was enjoying himself, you know, just letting the hair run, letting the breeze roll through his hair.
Yeah, he probably
was. It looked like he was on the way to practice or something like that.
He's enjoying himself?
Yeah.
Yeah, it probably was. Those soft practice. He'll show you a way how not to rebound to big.
Him and Jahlil Okafor?
Yeah. Yes. Yes. Anytime you're about 7 foot and you only average 5 boards a game, you're soft.
I'm not gonna call him man soft.
But anyway, on our Facebook page, I posed the same question that we're talking about Otto Porter right now, about if Randy Whitman wasn't Otto Porter's coach, we'd be a better player. Arian J said Randy Whitman gives him inconsistent minutes. When he plays for 25 minutes a game, he plays well, but then the next game he would get 5 minutes. My man, pretty much proves Will T's argument when he was stating earlier about how it adds to Will T's argument which he stated earlier about Otto Porter not getting consistent minutes. My man Troy said, "Dude has talent, and there's no way that he didn't learn a lot playing behind vets like Paul Pierce and Trevor Ariza. The past 2 seasons, if he's not the clear starter going into next season, it's time to plan ahead." Outside of Wall and Bill, the Wiz have made some terrible lottery picks.
Well, to the first post, I'll say this. And he said something that's key. You know, when he gets 25 minutes, he plays great. Some guys, if you're a coach and you really are in tune with your personnel, you know guys' personality, and you know some guys, you have to get those consistent minutes. It's going to take them a while to warm up. Mm-hmm. So you can't pull them as quickly. So, you know, maybe you pick your spots. You know, maybe you get him in at the 8-minute mark. You know, you get him, you pull Paul Pierce, get Paul Pierce a quick rest. Then you put Paul, you know, get Otto Porter, you know, 4 minutes to get him going. And then you pull him, put Paul Pierce back in. And then, you know, start the second quarter. You give Otto Porter more extensive amount of minutes. But that just goes to show, you know, maybe Randy Whitman isn't really in tune with the personnel and knows the type of players he has.
Yeah, Randy Whitman needs to get in tune or bring in Sam Cassell or Kevin Ollie.
I'm not going to go that far. I'll say this. A change does need, if this team doesn't go past the first round, a change does need to be made.
Okay. So I didn't know this. I saw this when I was researching Wizard stuff for the show. The Wizards signed Will Bynum for the rest of the season.
Hear nothing, say nothing.
Will Bynum was like that. He's one of the more talented non-used players in the NBA ever. Like, seriously. I'm dead serious.
I'm not saying he isn't talented, but...
Could he give, like, what's the backup? The backup
Nate dude? Robinson?
No. That's the backup for the Wizards.
Ramon Sessions.
Can he give him some go for that for Bryant?
The way Ramon Sessions has been shooting the ball, absolutely he can. If Will Bynum, but then that goes to say, if Will Bynum comes in and gives Ramon Sessions a run for his money, why the hell wasn't Will Bynum signed by someone else earlier this season?
You know, I'll say this: the NBA is a bunch of politics within the NBA. So I won't get on that. There's some players in the NBA that's not on a roster. That should be on the roster.
I totally agree with you on that one. But Will Bynum's a guy who's shown flashes. And can he put together, make those flashes consistent enough to stick around on a team?
As a backup, I think he can. As a backup.
We don't know. Hopefully, maybe he comes in. Because, you know, with that backup point guard position, the play has been really, really shaky.
Yeah, it has.
So, you know, maybe Will Bynum comes in and gives his team a jolt, gives them that second unit a jolt, and gives them a lift in the playoffs.
But this team has played well. I'm giving the Wizards some credit. They have played well of late. They knocked off Memphis, even though Jeff Green put a nasty dunk on Seraphin.
Yeah. That was an impressive win on Saturday. What was it? Saturday.
It was a weekend. Saturday or Friday?
I think it was Saturday.
No, Saturday.
It was Saturday. Yeah, Saturday night against Memphis. You know, that makes them 2-0 on the season against Memphis. That first one was kind of flukish because Memphis rusted like four of their starters.
They want to know against Memphis.
Yeah, so. that's the type of confidence building win you need when you're a team that after January has been horrible.
Terrible.
It's been terrible. Been sub 500. I'm not going to say terrible, but it's been sub 500. So you need these type of wins to get that confidence going into the playoffs.
This is a big win. I think this is the only probably above 500 team this team has beaten over the last X amount of weeks. So beating Memphis, a team that many think that can get to the NBA Finals. So that's a big win for the Wizards. And Bradley Beal played well in that game, and that's a player that needs to step up for this team to be more consistent. The Wizards right now, I believe they're the fifth seed. They would play Toronto at this moment, who's a fourth spot, but they're not too far from the Bulls, who are third seed. How important is it for the Wizards to finish strong in terms of seeding?
It's important. This team, what you want to do. If you're the Wizards, you want to stay on that 4-5 spot. Because realistically, if I'm the Wizards and I'm playing good, I feel more confident playing Atlanta in the second round than I would against Cleveland. Just being realistically, just looking at the matchups, I would want to stay at the 4-5 spot. You know, I would try to get to the 4 if I can to get that home court advantage for the first round of the playoffs. But I was trying to stay at that 4-5 spot to get that matchup against Atlanta. Because if I'm looking at them and I'm looking at that Atlanta team, and it's playoff basketball is totally different where you have to play half court, even though Atlanta plays really good defense. In a half court game, you need one guy to go to get you a bucket. Atlanta doesn't have that guy. Atlanta is a jump shooting team.
I like Teague. Everybody,
I love Teague.
I think a lot of people keep saying that, but I think Teague is a guy that makes that thing go. And I'll hold
but
it.
I'll tell you this. I'll take the matchup of John Wall versus Teague if I'm the Wizards. I'll take that matchup.
Over Kyrie versus
Kyrie can get hot. Yeah. I'll take that matchup. And I feel confident going into the second round against Atlanta versus Cleveland.
I know Teague's been gives John Wall the business.
Teague, his speed is amazing. Yeah, he has amazing speed and great vision in the court. But I don't see Jeff Teague averaging 25 points a game during the playoff series.
But I do. I see Al Horford putting buckets on them soft Wizards bigs.
That could definitely happen, but maybe you know Gortat's pretty tough.
Gortat's tough. I'm not gonna knock that.
Nah,
he's not tough.
Battens down and
Chris Humphreys will be playing defense.
Absolutely. And I would feel You got Chris Humphreys back.
Yeah.
So I would definitely feel better my chances against Atlanta than
obviously. Cleveland. Honestly, the only reason why I would feel more confident going Atlanta compared to Atlanta and Cleveland is because Cleveland has the best player in the world. So. Like, you don't want to go. I mean, it is what it is. And they're still the second seed. You got Kyrie Irving, who's probably one of the better players in the league. So
and then they also have the ultimate heat check player in J.R. Smith.
Who we saw over the weekend went crazy.
Yeah.
So, in that regard, yes, I'm totally with your argument. But if I'm for the Wizards, just for morale's sake, I wouldn't mind being a 3 seed. I mean, it's still a 3 seed. You know, they've competed well with teams like, well, no, they haven't actually. Cleveland's pretty much dominated them over of late. Yeah, so I guess 4-5 would be cool. I thought it'd be 3 seed. You know, just have confidence going to the season. You want to finish strong, but yeah, if you can get the 4 spot, that's fine. The 4 spot because you put yourself in line to play Atlanta. Though to be honest with you, and this is just they're losing to both teams. They're not getting past the second round, regardless. In my opinion, they're not.
I mean, well, if they don't get past the second round, Randy Whitman and Ernie, Randy and Ernie. Gotta go.
But you think they gotta go? Both?
Both of them gotta go.
They're not beating like Atlanta and Cleveland, though. They're not.
Hey, well,
it's not having it.
Look, if I'm Ted Leonsis, I look at my roster. Mm-hmm. I look at Atlanta's roster. Okay. And I'm like, what the hell? Why can't we possibly do what they're doing? We have more talent on our roster than they do. And you know who evaluate and pick that talent? Ernie Grunfeld, you know, who coaches this talent and hasn't gotten them perform to the level that an Atlanta can, Randy Whitman. So both of them got to go. If you don't make it to the Eastern Conference Finals, got to go.
So you think it's a must for this team to make it to the Eastern Conference Finals?
I think in order for them to save their job, both, because this is the thing.
So even they play.
Let's look at it realistically. Jan Vesely. Otto Porter doesn't look like he could. When you could have picked Nerlens Noel instead of Otto Porter.
Nerlens Noel is okay.
Okay, I mean,
I know you said, but it, because would he play on this team? Probably not. Yeah. I know what you're saying, though.
Chris Singleton,
he never got a chance here.
I'm missing someone else.
Trevor Booker, who's going now?
Trevor Booker, you let Trevor. Even though
Trevor Booker was good, though.
You know, you can make the case that Chris Humphreys is a bit of an upgrade over Trevor Booker.
We can make an argument.
You can make that argument. You got to ask yourself, do I feel comfortable with this guy at the helm making another draft pick when he's blown so many of them?
Yeah.
I don't. I just don't. Now, not saying that he hasn't made good trades and he hasn't messed up things and fixed them, but I just wouldn't feel confident with this guy with another first round pick evaluating and bringing in that talent for my team, especially when my team is, I think, a team that's on the cusp of potentially being able to ascend to a higher level in the Eastern Conference. I wouldn't feel comfortable.
I agree with you on that regard. I mean, I don't know if I think one would be fired. I don't think both would be fired. I think Ernie Grunfeld is safe. I think Randy Whitman is the guy who would be fired.
If Ernie Grunfeld is safe, then you're just being stagnant.
Mm-hmm. Well, I know what you're right.
You're just being happy to be above 500 for a season, because obviously nothing's changed. The results aren't going to change.
Yeah, but what about the level? All right, so let's look at the owner himself. The owner, if we look at what the Washington Capitals, how he deals with the Capitals. He's very patient.
He's very patient. I'll give him that. But and that's true. Sometimes it takes that patience. But the reality is, Randy Whitman has shown he cannot coach offense. Mm-hmm. So it's either A, you bring in an offensive guru, assistant coach, to help improve the sets and the flow of the offense instead of high pick and roll, high pick and roll, John Wall off of pick and roll, jumping and make a pass with nowhere to go. Or you got to go. Me personally, if I'm trying to take this team to another level, you got to go, especially with the cap increasing like $30 million a year after next. Mm-hmm. I don't keep Ernie Grunfeld, and I don't bring it, and I don't keep Randy Whitman. The guy I wanted is in Sacramento, and I think he would have been excellent for this team. George Karl, I think he would have been excellent for this team.
Yeah, he has great offense, actually. Really, really good offense, and he relates to his players, but it's amazing that people get sick of him eventually, though.
I don't know why.
Well, Denver's regretting him. Denver's regretting
him.
Oh,
hell yeah.
They're regretting it. That was a dumb move. Anyway, let's go to Paul George. Came back from that gruesome injury. Playing in USA basketball, scored 13 points on his return. Was it a good idea for him to play on Saturday? Sunday.
If he was healthy, 100% totally healthy, didn't have any setbacks, then it wasn't a good idea. Because you know why? You're not contending for nothing.
Not exactly.
Just sit on the bench. You're not contending for nothing. You could have gotten the play in practice, but no, to me, in no way, shape, or form is it a good idea.
I think it was a bad idea. In my opinion, the reason why it's a bad idea is because you're going to play Atlanta. You're going to get out the first round. Atlanta's going to bounce you out the first round. It's a waste of time.
And you're not even in.
You don't have a guaranteed spot.
Yeah,
it's if you make the playoffs.
And Boston looks, for all intents and purposes, looks like the team is going to get the number eight seed.
I think Boston's the seventh seed.
Nah. Miami's
no,
a seven
no,
seed.
No, they're not. Miami's out. I checked it. Miami's not even in.
Are you sure?
Positive.
I thought six was Milwaukee, seven was Miami, and eight is Boston.
Brooklyn is seven. Eighth is Boston. I'm sorry. That's what it is. Brooklyn is eight. So Miami's not even. So like back to your point, they're not. They may not even make. Like they might not even make the postseason, and they're struggling.
Okay. Well, I'll take your word for it.
Yeah. So they might have, so we're looking at like, hold on, I'll pull it up too. To even rush him in that situation for what? Like, what are you dealing with?
Nah. Yeah. Exactly. Like, you're not getting anything out of it, man. To be honest with you, you know, you have David West who. Oh yeah.
Tell me so.
Well, nah. Hold on. Let me see.
Yeah, Miami below Indiana. Miami's actually below Indiana. They're about the same.
Okay. Yeah.
So, to even, they're not going to even. This team isn't even. They're just not even in position. I don't even care if you make the playoffs, to be honest, but you're AC. You're not going anything higher than AC, probably.
Nah, you're not. You're not going to be any higher than the AC. So, to me, it just doesn't make sense. I think Larry Bird is one of the smarter basketball minds in the NBA. Mm-hmm. But to me, you know, why he, and I understand why he probably let Paul George come back, because Larry Bird's a competitor. Paul George is a competitor. He saw how hard that he fought to come back and how much, you know, grit and the focus and the passion he had to get back on the court to help his team. But sometimes you just gotta say, hey, executive decision, I don't think it's the right thing for you to come back. Let's shut it down, you know. Or maybe I can't even say I would have let him play the last game of the season.
No, I won't play at all.
I wouldn't let him play at all.
He wouldn't have played at all. I'm getting a lottery pick. That's how I look at it. You're not playing gives me, it guarantees me a lot, guarantees me getting a lottery pick. That's added more talent to the roster. I'm getting you back at 110%. Hopefully, you know, if Roy Hibbert gets back I can have that big end. If not, I trade with Roy Hibbert. I have talent. I have talent now. We're a year removed from you being healthy going to Eastern Conference title championship game. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Sorry.
Yeah, I totally agree.
Championship series, excuse me. So yeah. I need Paul. If I'm Larry Bird, I don't like this decision. It's just not smart.
It's not. It reeks of me.
Yeah, it really does.
Well, I mean, he wants to come back and help his team, but it's also a little bit.
I don't know how much. But what is going to happen? Do you really think? I mean, we all know to a certain extent. You know what teams you can beat. Do you really think you're going to win a championship out the eighth spot? You going to knock out Atlanta? I don't know, man.
Yeah, I mean, and you're right. You have to take that type of long-term view on it. Okay, let's say you do upset Atlanta. You're not beating Cleveland. You're not. You just aren't built for it this year. So.
You're not. So just relax. You're like,
you couldn't beat Cleveland last year. You had a way better team, in my opinion.
You talk about Miami. You talk about Cleveland.
Excuse me. You couldn't beat Miami last year.
And this team is, to be honest,
it's better than that Miami team. So, no.
It is what it is. Anyway, it's about time to go hard in the paint. So let me cue the music.
Cue it up, Flocka.
I'll go first.
Okay. Hey,
this is the first time, you know, I'll go first. Alright. Well, you know, I'm looking at this team, the Boston Celtics right now. They're striving right now. They're striving for the eighth spot in the Eastern Conference. I'm going with Bradley. My man Bradley's balling. Two-way player, plays great defense and now starting to score. He has great work with his head coach and what's my man's name?
That's Brad Stevens.
Yeah, Brad Stevens leading the way. But I like seeing Bradley down the stretch leading his team to the postseason. So I'm gonna go Bradley going hard in the paint.
Okay, I'm gonna go with a guy on the Pacers team. I'm gonna go with George Hill. Hill starting to step it up. He's starting to look like he could be a point guard that we mentioned as being a difference maker. You know, if he continues this down the stretch, I'm pretty sure they aren't going to make the playoffs, but he'll definitely build his confidence going into next season when you have him and a totally healthy Paul George back.
Yeah.
So I'm going with George Hill.
I like that one. Actually, I really like that one. George Hill's been playing real
Thank you.
Good.
I did my research.
I can tell. Very impressed. He's been playing great, great, great basketball. I beat the Wizards, matter of fact.
Yep.
On a buzzer beater layup, right?
Yep.
Yeah. So
because they didn't switch.
They didn't switch. Yeah. Because Randy Whitman said,
"I don't feel confident with my players switching." Okay.
What a great coach. Great coach.
And that's the great coach that people are happy to have here.
And we're about to wrap up the show. Before we wrap up, make sure you listen to our show by visiting our official Urban Sports Scene website, which is www.walio.podbean.com. Podbean is spelled P-O-D-B-E-A-N. Walio is spelled W-A-L-E-O. We are also on iTunes, Twitter, and Facebook. Just search The Urban Sports Scene. And if you have any questions or comments, just email us at change.da.game6@gmail.com.
Once again, thank you all for listening to us, man. You guys are the reason why we do it. We're sports fans just like you. It's been a blast. I won't be here next week. I have to travel, but I'll be back the week after that. Next week.
We have a show next week. Should be able to have a show next week.
Okay.
I'm gonna try.
I'll be back the week after next, and we're gonna do the damn thing from there.
Yeah, it's the Urban Sports Ain't for Ages, folks.
Dig.
Doses. 8 Megalitas out, my man.